Welcome to No Filter Sports. Recording this a day late because we wanted to see the Lions play on Thursday. So recording this on Friday morning, November 27th. I'm Eli Zaret and with Bob Page, of course, and Denny McClain. And, you know, when Denny was off about a week ago, Denny, I asked Fred and Bob and Larry to pick me up. I was having a real hard time, you know, trying to take the sports world seriously, trying to stay engaged, trying to, you know, enjoy the athleticism. Mahomes had just thrown that incredible touchdown pass the night before, whatever it was. But now I got a different view, and I'm going to rave this here, and you guys can respond. But
First of all, I think I'm speaking on behalf of Denny McClain and our producer, Brandon McAfee. It's wonderful to hear your dulcet tones on this program again. How about that? Eli Zaret, welcome back to the show. When Denny was off for a week, boy, we've had a cast of thousands in here, and it's been fun. But you know what, fellas? This is like watching the Bruins and the Chicago Blackhawks, original six. It's a big deal. Yeah. And some people are calling us the original three now.
Yeah, I saw
that. Go ahead, Eli.
Anyway, the sports world has just become so desperate, so torn apart. I mean, the absurdity and insanity of playing in a pandemic is revealed anew with every passing day. Now, Nick Saban, number one Alabama, can't coach during the Iron Bowl this weekend. Last night, number 18 USC in Colorado canceled. USC didn't have enough scholarship players available on the offensive line. They can't play. Games are no contest. Cincinnati Temple, no contest. Ohio State and Illinois still may be called off, though for now it is on for tomorrow. We shall see.
You guys watching any college basketball here with the start of the season?
Yes,
we're gonna get to that in a little bit, but all I'm gonna do is interject right here. You look at those crawls, you're watching a game on the bottom of the screen, and like it's like one out of every three matchups canceled. It says canceled. It'll give you a score, then the next matchup, canceled.
Already. I started counting the number of college football games canceled, about 100. I stopped counting at about 70 or 80. And speaking of college basketball, yes, it's turning inside out before it even starts. Tennessee this week canceled two games after their coach Rick Barnes tested positive. Duke and Georgia both canceled games against Gardner Webb. We can live without that, but still, Connecticut women's team. And so here you got Val Ackerman, the Big East commissioner, saying, this is not the way you want to start a season. Going into a season at a defensive crouch is a tough thing. Rick Pitino, who was in quarantine, says that with the vaccines and the flu season arriving, we should just postpone the season until March.
We
end
talked
it with
about
May
that.
Madness. Yep. So 200,000 cases. So this is really stupid almost. It's foolish.
But
it's
I'm glad they're doing it. I know what you're saying. I'm glad they're doing it. Again, I had planned to get to college basketball later, but this morning I finished watching my tape of Gonzaga, number one preseason against number six Kansas. That was an enjoyable game. So I, for one, am glad as hell that they are playing it. At least somebody is when they can get a game in.
I enjoyed watching the Michigan game, although, of course, Eastern couldn't play because their top eight players were in.
Now, they did play.
They did play. And they played fairly well. So the point is, we're in the midst of a pandemic. The players, the games are getting mowed down. As Chris Christie, former governor of New Jersey, defined another ongoing national post-election fiasco, which he said, it's embarrassing. This is embarrassing. This is like the human wave of World War I. Let's just all run out there. Someone's going to get shot down and killed, but the few survivors.
You know, that's I'm laughing. That's an unfortunate analogy. I'm laughing and I shouldn't have. I know where you're coming from
with
that.
It's ridiculous. Come on. Can't we do better than this?
What do you want to do? You want to cancel everything? You want to cancel it?
You know what you're doing right now? You're doing one of those long questions that last for 3 hours, and then we have to come back and what the hell did he say?
But then he's going to answer it himself. He's going to ask a standard five-minute question, then answer it with a five-minute answer.
And listen, but the best part is he'll raise his hand and say, listen, I've got a question for me.
Okay, well, you know.
All right, well, let's get to the object. Okay. It was so promising on Thursday. The FLs go up 7-0. Doesn't it seem as though they go up early in every single game?
Every game.
It was looking good. And then J.J. Watt picked off that lame-ass short pass from Matthew Stafford, returns it 19 yards for a touchdown. I mean, look, everybody's saying this is such comedic relief, and it was. So as you know, I'm sure you watched, the FLs got the ball back. The first play after that, fumble, Houston ball to Detroit 30. Four plays later, Deshaun Watson TD pass. And fellas, the FLs are thus 2 for 2. Two snaps from scrimmage, two giveaways. And it went on from there with Kerryon Johnson's turn to fumble. So eventually there were three Houston takeaways in the last eight snaps. I mean, you can't make this stuff up.
Well, I think something else too. I don't think the players are in this 100% for a change. I mean, I just don't. I don't, especially when the Lions are there. And I watched a bunch of, not a bunch, but three games yesterday. And I got to tell you, nobody looks like they're playing with their heart right now. Everybody looks like they're kind of waiting on the vaccination. You know, between the players with COVID, between the injuries. And remember this, we lost a number of players before anything even started this year when they chose to opt out. So there's a whole bunch more people who opted out rather than play this year. And I don't blame them now that we see what's happening. If they thought they were going to have 100 situations canceled, games and or players jumping off the boat or suspended, you think they would have played?
Sure. Well, Danny, I don't know what three games you watched on Thanksgiving. Because they only played two because the Steelers were postponed. Yeah. But I would take issue with what you're saying. It's not as though they look like they're not into it. There were two bad football games played by four awful NFL teams. You might have been confused by that.
No, I was looking at the basketball at one time for a little bit.
You're almost talking about the details, pardon me, that don't even matter anymore, that they that they can't stop the run or that they're, you know, they play too much man defense. You can go on and on and on. The point is that it's over. So I'm watching the game yesterday as it's about to begin, and I have this vision in my mind. I remember as a kid, did you watch the movie Angels with Dirty Faces with Jimmy Cagney? And in the last scene, he's walking down the corridor towards the electric chair. And that's how I pictured Patricia walking onto the field. Will the governor and a last minute appeal spare him? will the execution go through? Will he get another 2 weeks if something happens, if somebody votes in his favor?
I mean, Eli, even your boy Trump pardoned a turkey for Thanksgiving, right?
That.
The traditional presidential turkey pardon.
He pardoned Corn and Cobb, and I just pictured whether Sheila Hamp will wave her hand over there over the heads of Corn and Cobb the way Trump did and say, Matt and Bob, meaning Quinn and Patricia, I'm going to pardon you for one more game. But I don't think she will.
Brandon, what do you got for us? The Mr. Lions fan here.
Well, don't forget that Ms. Sheila Ford Hamp was actually photographed yesterday at Ford Field with her hands in her face, and she quickly went viral. And that's really the first we've heard or even seen of her this year.
And did you see what I tweeted about that? It said, put the caption on it. Did you see my caption with her head buried in her hands? My caption was, oh my God, my head hurts. I told myself no more than three mimosas this morning. That was my caption. I deserved a prize for that.
That's so unfair. Was it after the pick six or was it after any of the other atrocities during the game?
I don't know exactly when it was, but it was, you know, it was just a bad look. It's pretty much the first photo of her that's gone viral since she's taken over as owner. And you can't really expect Matt Patricia to hold on to this gig much longer.
No. I give credit to I don't subscribe to the Free Press and News anymore because I refuse to pay for those two newspapers.
Terrible.
I don't know what they said, but Michael Rothstein covers the Lions every day for
my sympathies to Michael Rothstein.
For ES, but he's good man. He's open. He doesn't hold back. He asks the tough questions. He called it an embarrassment. He says during Houston's 41-25 waxing of Detroit, one thing became clear. It's time. This is over. Patricia needs to go now. Progress will never come. This team, Patricia's team, will never improve. All the Lions do under his guidance is play bad football, and that was on display.
Maybe this is a young guy who doesn't get it. It's not Matt Patricia. Who cares? It's the Ford family, damn it.
It's
and nothing's
going to
change until they sell, and they
won't
sell.
Unless she makes a change now and hires good people, which is a possibility.
Well, that's got a lot to do with hiring the right people.
Yeah, right, like they're going
to
get that right.
In a long, long time. It's time to get some football people, serious football people, who can actually run a GM organization in the way he's supposed to run it. And, of course, with good, solid coaching.
And then the new five-year rebuilding program can begin, Danny.
Yeah, right.
Okay, but let's not argue this because we are at an impasse where Danny and I are saying perhaps she can change the trend that the other members of her family carried on for many years. And you were saying that because her last name at least used to be Ford, yeah, that it's impossible. So
she does say she's a very competitive person and she likes to play tennis. So I'm sure she knows what she's doing.
Let's try and put the sarcasm aside and hope that she does the right thing for now.
And by the way, did you see this?
Let me say something. Then you can respond. I found our game yesterday entertaining.
Yeah.
I mean, I saw lots of runs, pitch outs, long field goals. I mean, tremendous field goals. And you know what? Oh, the flea flicker's back. I love it.
Oh,
I mean, how much more entertainment can there be?
I totally agree with that. And after that Kerryon Johnson fumble I mentioned, next snap, Houston fumbles it right back. And I thought they were going to put a laugh track in there, a la, Dick Van Dyke Show or something like that. That's what they did. Did you guys see this story in our Only the FL's department? Left tackle Taylor Decker, it is now known, suddenly left the pregame warmups early at Carolina last Sunday for an unknown reason. But he played every snap on offense without any apparent problem. What happened? On Monday, Decker revealed the mystery behind his sudden departure: blisters caused by wearing his dress shoes. Now, I've been on the phone with my medical sources back in Michigan. They tell me he should make a full recovery. Only the FLs.
Let me take a step forward in terms of Patricia. So I'm thinking about this. I'm looking, look at this guy. You know, he's been such a failure here. He looks bad. He sounds bad. He's got no sense of humor as far as we can tell. And I'm thinking, until he came here, what a great football life he had. Starting at RPI, moves upward. He goes from small college and decades of paying his dues, becomes an NFL head coach, hallowed ground. Only 32 men in the world at any moment can have that job. But as happens in many careers, and all of us have run into it, there's always the brick wall. And he hit it here. And
that's,
you know,
right. Eli Jim Schwartz is a good football coach. Eli Jim Caldwell is a good football coach. You know what I'm saying? I mean, this is a repetitive pattern.
So was Rod Marinelli, who was 0-16. They're all good football coaches. You get to a point, though, you know. And so us who don't really know him, don't know his past, fans, media, we can look at him and ignore everything he did to get to this point and kind of say, oh, you thought you were good, huh? You thought you could come here and change 63 years of losing and you haven't even been a head coach before. Well, you aren't any good is what we're all saying. Go back to where you came from. Go cry on Belichick's shoulder. It's a very, very cold business, and we'll see.
Don't you think he's lost his sense of humor by now?
I don't think he ever had a sense of humor. He didn't cut one joke since he came here.
Fred Heumann has said on this show that he is not a good guy. He does not have, I've never met Matt Patricia at all. I wouldn't know, but Fred apparently has. Yeah, Fred says he's not a good guy and he does not wish him well.
So yesterday after the game, Patricia's job is to talk to everybody. So of course, the questions are, where can you go from here?
Same questions every week and same answers every week. Right.
Here's the same answer no matter what the question is. Here's answer number one.
My thoughts are really just with the team here today and what, we were trying to do here today. It doesn't go beyond that. It's what I focus on. I focus on the team. I focus on those guys that go out on that field, those guys that are in that locker room, and try to give them everything I can to give them a chance to go be successful. So that's the focus. That never changes. It is what it is. And, so
that was him responding to, does he think about his firing and does he worry about his job? But of course he says, no, the inevitable question that follows that is, it's taking a personal toll. Same answer. No, it's all about the players, but here's an interesting question. I don't know if this is Rothstein or somebody else, but listen to this question and answer. Go ahead, Brandon.
Why hasn't this worked?
Yeah. Just focused on right now. Man, just got done with that locker room. I love those guys. I know they played hard, really hard. They're hurting, and we know we got a lot of work to do. So that's my focus right now. It's on today.
Now, before this game, sometime in the week leading up, and I didn't see the episode, but the first take on ESPN with Kellerman and Stephen A. Smith. This is before yesterday's game. Here's what Kellerman and then Smith had to say.
They've gotten much worse. They didn't just get a little worse. They lost, 12, 13 games last year? They got much worse. So, yeah, you fire a guy after four measly seasons for succeeding for a franchise that never does? You could apologize to the fan base for hiring Matt Patricia if you want to, but apologize for Jim Caldwell for letting a successful coach go.
I don't think they owe Jim Caldwell an apology. I think they owe the city of Detroit, Michigan, the state of Michigan, the National Football League, and the American public an apology for being the Detroit Lions. They have been systematically pathetic on every level.
So what else is new? And there's a guy who doesn't know what he's talking about. Because as you know, Tom Izzo and Steve Mariucci and the great people of Michigan's Upper Peninsula are all Green Bay Packers fans. They're not Lions fans up there. And I got two questions I want to ask of my teenage hero, Dennis Dale McClain. First question, do you stand by your prediction on this very program at the start of the season, the Detroit Lions will make the playoffs? Question number two.
That's so
do you stand by your other prediction? Matt Patricia will not be fired during the regular season. Let me answer
the first question first, okay? Right now, I'm just concentrating on the players that are on the ball.
Great answer, Denny. Great answer. You know, I tell you, I don't know what everybody's point was. Obviously, the pick six yesterday by J.J. Watt, but I think the play for me was when they're stopped on fourth and one. When the game is still alive, yeah. They get 17, you know, down 17, 10 minutes to go. Now, the next play was the flea flicker that Watson threw into the end zone, and Jim Nance called it the kill shot.
Yeah.
Of course, they said at that point, Watson was the best player on the field, which he certainly was yesterday. So
I'll tell you one thing, yeah. Jim Nance and the other guy, they didn't spare any adjectives for Stafford, did they? I mean, I thought they were on the team with Stafford at one time. I never heard so many adjectives for a guy who loses 8 out of 10 times every time he goes out there.
Well, you know, I don't know if you saw the pregame show, but they played up the social aspect of Stafford and his wife, Kelly, and his involvement in the whole Black Lives Matter thing and so on and so forth. So to them, I guess he's, you know, I don't doubt that Matt Stafford is a very good person. And I also don't doubt that he's a very good quarterback. It just gets back to what Eli brought up a moment ago, how Detroit Lions franchise tends to ruin otherwise good people and competent people. And I think you'd have to put Matthew Stafford in that group as well. Put him someplace else, probably would have won a Super Bowl or two by now.
Yeah. Yesterday's came on the awful win against Washington where they coughed up a 21-point lead. They've lost the last four by 10 plus. So she has to make the decision. I guess the only thing to guess now is, it may happen today. This is Monday morning. Today she could name an interim coach and let him go. We got to leave that possibility. I guess it all depends. What we don't really know is what that locker room is truly like. Have players quit? I don't think they've really quit, though. They did look like they quit the week before when they lost 20-0 to Carolina. I do believe they played hard yesterday for the
You know, the other thing is they got 10 days off now. They can do an awful lot of stuff over the next 10 days.
Yeah, so we'll see what happens there. I want to get into some other things that kind of bothered me. And what bothered me, and you may be surprised to hear this, was the all-black crew on last Thursday's game.
You know what? I think I know where you're going with this, and I think I'm firmly in your camp.
Well, let's see, because first I want to tell you about the Aldo Eye Center, which I tout all the time because I got my eyes done there and what a difference it's made in my life. Of course, I'm over 45. When you lose your close vision, which
over what?
I'm over 45.
You're over a lot more than that, pal.
Slow. I am over 45. That's true. Just like Al Ackerman used to say, how old are you, Al? I say, he says, I'm somewhere between 40
and death. Yeah, I asked him that. He says, kid, I'm somewhere between 40 and death. Only my agent and I know the answer to that question.
And then I knew he was Jewish. I forget how religion came up, and he said, I'm a druid. And I'd never heard of druidism, so I don't know. You get what I got, which is multifocal lens implants. You can see the tiniest of print. I'll see perfectly at a distance, and it lasts a lifetime. I'm 70, and I've never seen better than I do right now. And you know I wore glasses for all those years. Of course, people under 45 still get custom LASIK from Dr. Yaldo. He has the most precise in the world. Throw those contacts and glasses in the garbage for good. The evaluation is free, doesn't cost a penny. Find out what procedure from Dr. Yaldo will change your life. Call 1-800-398-EYES. Go to YaldoEyeCenter.com. Tell them No Filter Sports sent you. You'll get $1,500 off the regular price. And I want to tell you also about Lincoln's legacy of luxury cars. I love Lincolns, and I get all of them, six in a row now at Hoot McInerney's Star Lincoln, where the buying, the service elements, the personal touch is as good as it gets. It's why Star Lincoln is Michigan's premier Lincoln dealership, an exemplary family business started by Hoot the legendary auto giant and philanthropist over 50 years ago. Drive the star of American auto luxury. That's Starlink, and make an appointment at 248-354-4900. Look at that Nautilus. I got the Nautilus. I love it. You can buy Effortlease also. That's online at starlinkin.com. You're listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast. I'm watching the Thursday night game, and they announced that they have the all-black officiating crew. And I'm thinking, why are we taking notice of that? It's the first time in NFL history. Executive VP of Football Operations Troy Vincent hailed the move as, quote, a testament to the countless and immeasurable contributions of black officials to the game, their exemplary performance, and to the power of inclusion that is the hallmark of this great game. And I'm thinking, first of all, I look at the Buck defense. Guess what the Buck defense was? All black. 11 guys. Why didn't we honor the 11 black guys on the Buck defense?
And remember this also, Eli, that officials is very important that they have their mechanics down together. They work together. What they did is they deliberately lowered the standard of officiating. Though there weren't any problems, and these guys are all good NFL officials, because they put the crew specially together for this one game. Did you know that? That's not right.
Okay. Now, you may interpret my comments so far as being racist or some such. In fact, it's the
exact opposite. Everyone knows you're a racist, Eli.
It's the exact opposite. It's gratuitous. What does it prove? It's symbolic. I don't think, and I can't speak for black people or the quote-unquote black community, which is a ridiculous term because the black people are as diverse as white people. That's a bunch of BS. The point is, black folks just want equality. They want to be treated equally, whether it's when their car gets stopped on the highway, whether they're applying for a job. They just want equal treatment. But this is a gratuitous sign. So what does that mean? Oh, now we don't have to worry about racism anymore because we put seven officials together?
I just saw NFL officials out there, and they did a good job. There were no problems. So what?
A gratuitous effort to show that we're really into inclusion.
Yeah.
And
the point is, we got to get past this color of people's skin at some point. Damn it.
The reason there were 11 Buccaneers on defense last night or Thursday wasn't because they wanted an all-black defense. Those are the best 11 guys they could get to play defense in that game. And that's all black folks, I think, want. Just treat us equally, and if we're the best, then give us the job. That's all we ask for.
Thank you very much. And same as the NBA, who cares if you got two black teams? And when the Wings send out the power play unit, even though there are a lot of black players in the NHL now, most of the time it's an all-white group. Who cares? It's just the best people.
Just put the puck in the net.
But I also think what Eli's trying to say is everything seems to be gratuitous lately. Yeah, I mean, there's been too much. Way over the top. Thank you.
That's the overkill. Right. That's the overkill that it's been. Take a great movement, Black Lives Matter, and shove it in people's faces so much that they even the ones who are sympathetic start to resent them.
Yeah. Okay. Well, look, you mentioned this televised game, and that plays right into something that I wanted to ask you guys about. I want all three of your opinions on this. There's more controversy apparently with Monday Night Football. Andrew Marchand is the sports media critic of the New York Post, and he wrote on Wednesday, I'm quoting, "It almost seems like a weekly event that Chris Fowler and Kirk Herbstreit are prognosticating about if one of them would one day call ESPN's NFL games. Fowler's comments sound as if they have no regard for the current team that's made up of Steve Levy, Louis Riddick, and Brian Griese. Fowler said on a radio show Monday, yeah, I love what I'm doing, but you never shut yourself off. So now Chris is a good guy. And he backed down and said, look, I don't want Steve Levy's job, but Marchand's really taking him to task. So we got this new Monday Night Football team, which everybody seemed to want in the wake of the last couple of years. Do you like what they're doing, fellas? Levy, Griese, Louis Riddick, or do you care?
I think they're fine. Levy's got a good sense of humor. He's been doing it a long time. I like his enthusiasm. Griese's very knowledgeable. I think he works a lot harder than his father did, the Hall of Famer Bob Griese, who Gary used to always say, and rightly so, just showed up. And the fact that he's a Hall of Famer was all the preparation that he needed to do. Riddick is a little boring, but he's technical. That's okay. It'll never be the GIF, Dandy Don, and Howard. It'll never be like that. They've tried many, many combinations over the years, but this crew certainly doesn't turn me off to the game.
Brandon, Denny, you like the current Monday Night crew?
Yeah, I don't have any trouble with it. And don't ever forget, one of my less proud moments in my entire life was when I was trying to get on that Monday night football game. Me and what's his name? Who's the big disc jockey in New York? Howard.
Imus.
No, Howard. No, Howard. Yeah,
Howard Stern.
It was Imus.
You told that story. It was Howard Stern last time. Now it's Don Imus.
It's Howard Imus. Well, Howard Imus.
Just be careful it's not you next time. But, yeah, it was.
Don Stern.
I think they throw in more entertainment than some of the previous guys have. And I think people who don't understand the great
I just want to see the game. Brandon, how about you? You like these guys?
People enjoy the game with the stories. Why are stories so important? Because people enjoy them and they try to get some more entertainment out there. They need it.
I think the crew is fine. I don't mind. It's not going to determine whether or not I listen or watch the game. I do appreciate some of the new graphics that they have. I think those are pretty good.
I find myself watching just the Monday night pregame show on ESPN, and I think that Booger McFarlane is so ripped on Monday Night Football. God, get this guy out of here. He's pretty good on this pregame show. So maybe it was just a matter of ESPN finding the right slot for this guy. I like that show.
And I'll tell you, we talked about it last time, but I was watching, Nance and Romo did the Lions game. And there are two things that I want to bring up. First of all, they do have great chemistry. And Romo is great, and I think it's an interesting story because Nance, I'm sure Romo understands, he wants as much money as Romo, $17.5 million, which is much more than he makes. But did you notice the spot, this was a 60-second spot that our friend, the Sussman Agency, that has given us our two clients here, Feldman of Chevrolet and also Power Home Solar, did you see the 60-second Barry Sanders spot?
Yeah.
Did you see it, Bob, where you were
watching?
I don't
watch commercials. You know that. I record every game and just blow through all of them.
Oh, well, anyway, missed a good one. It was terrific. Did you see it, Brandon?
I did, too. Yeah, it was terrific.
The Power Home Solar one was a great commercial. I did not see the first one you were discussing, but I didn't know what the actual product was at first. It was just Barry Sanders.
Right.
And he's running and he's doing some workout at a field. But what he's saying is inspirational, and he's talking about the sun, and then boom! Power Home Solar. I was like, "Hey, those guys."
And it was
that was pretty good, huh?
It was black and white, and then it morphed into or dissolved into color at the end, where Jason Waller, talked about the sun.
Well, and Brandon's right about one thing. It took him a while to get to whatever the commercial was about. I mean, I said, "What the hell?"
Well, it held your attention.
Well, you can do that with a 60.
Sanders,
right?
So, and you know what else I missed, though, because I do blow through this stuff, and I'm reading all this stuff in the Detroit papers Friday morning about how this 19-year-old piano player was amazing in the national anthem. Did anybody see the national anthem?
I didn't listen to it. I saw him playing.
I heard he was great. Like, moved to tears. Some people said they were.
Well, you know what was also so sad? Thanksgiving. Yeah.
Are you going to say what I think you're going to say?
Thanksgiving is the great gathering where we all get together and hug our families, and we just crowd around that dinner table and we eat the turkey. And so the great gathering has become the great ungathering. Now, instead of people coming together, now they're all apart on Thanksgiving. And that stadium, that Ford Field, was ghostly.
And that's one of the things I want to ask Rick Goslin, the pro football writer, who's our guest on the program today. When Rick comes on, how come I saw all these people at the Jerry Dome in Dallas for the Skins game and not in Detroit? There's no uniform policy in the NFL whether people can actually go to the games or not, and I don't get it.
Well, it's up to the clubs to let as many people as they want in.
I wonder why it goes with
their local rules from the governor and the mayor. But, as far as people getting in there, I think Dallas is allotted 19,000 seats, although it sure looked like a lot more than that.
It did, didn't it?
They said 30,000.
Really 30,000?
Yeah, it seemed like a lot more than 19,000.
They're allowed to do 20%, and it holds about 100,000. So
about 80 or 90.
They're allowed to do
big time. And then, of course, Saturday, which is a nice segue into this, once again, we're going to have arguably the most famous college football stadium in America, the Big House, with, 1,000 parents and family members rattling around as Penn State plays Michigan. And Michigan State's got Northwestern, undefeated, by the way, Northwestern coming up. I mean, it's dead. I mean, but, the saving grace of these games, Eli was talking at the top of the show about this general malaise with the COVID cancellations and everything. The thing about these two games we have on Saturday is Michigan and Michigan State have been so awful this year. It's like, of course I'm going to watch the games. I don't really care. I'm not excited about watching the games, but they're there. So I'm going to watch them.
Well, Bob, why don't you bang out a couple of, before we go into some other stuff? I'll talk about Big Ten.
Why don't I tell everybody? I want to remind everybody once again about what's going on with the economy. A lot of good news, especially in the mortgage business, where rates are still at all-time lows. And if your current mortgage rate is above 3%, Hall Financial simply asks you, what are you waiting for? Save money. Get it redone. Currently at Hall, almost 70% of all loans don't even require an appraisal. And if for some reason your loan does, for this month of November only, running out of time here, folks, Hall Financial is going to pay that appraisal charge for you up to $500. Remarkably, closing times have now sped up even more than in the recent past. Right now, the majority of loans at Hall Financial are closing in just 10 or fewer business days. Here's what you do. Go to our website, nofiltersportspodcast.com, and you'll see the Hall Financial link. You click on it. That'll get you started. Hall Financial, lower payments, better options, and more personal attentions. And how about, I didn't see what the market's doing today, but God, it's
up a little bit.
Is it? Yeah, well, it's amazing what's been going on in the stock market. What to do, you know, what to invest in. Why don't you let Luke Nowacki help you with this? Luke works with Pinnacle Wealth Strategies, and he can and will help you plan for future family obligations and your own retirement. Let Luke's track record of success and decades of experience enable him to create a custom solution for you or your business. Give Luke a call. Give you the number all the time. Take a pen. Write it down if you haven't yet. 248-663-4748. And set up a complimentary consultation with him. Then if you feel comfortable, let Luke do his thing by laying out a plan that fits your individual needs. He's ethical, knowledgeable, caring. He's Luke Nowacki of Pinnacle Wealth Strategies. Again, 248-663-4748. Advisory services are offered through Royal Alliance Associates. And you're listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast.
And I'm going to, and you guys are all going to call me Monday and say, oh, Denny, thank you for telling us all about that. Denny, thank you, thank you, thank you. We're going to send a charity check to somebody. Okay, now listen, today at 3
o'clock. What the devil are you talking about?
Just hang on.
By the way, are you going to accuse him of like giving like a little foreshadowing, unlike you ever do, Bob, right? Go ahead, Denny.
No, not Bob. Today at 3 o'clock Eastern time in Arizona, the quarterback Manning and Curry, Steph Curry, are playing Barkley and Mickelson
in the
golf tournament. Yeah. Now, here's the best part. Folks, if you have not seen Charles Barkley play golf,
I know.
It is the greatest show in the world for about 35
minutes. But Denny, here's the worst part of that. What you're saying right now. It's already over. People aren't going to listen to this show till Friday evening over the weekend.
That's okay.
Watching
but it should, I'm going to watch, though. It should be fun.
Watching him is worth admission. It really is.
And I think it's fair to say that Mickelson alone is a fair match against both Curry and Manning. That Barkley won't contribute any shots, but Mickelson's got a 50-50 chance alone of beating those two. Hey, can I just mention one more a fumble yesterday? That the local beer brewery, by the way, Eastern Market Brewery, is a great brewery. I drink their beer.
We got a new sponsor?
Fabulous. Wow. No. They created the, what did they call it? The same old lager. But foolishly, they put a picture of Barry Sanders on the can. And Barry sued them or took them to court, and they had to dump the whole beer. But what a shame!
Why would you do that? Why would you do that? Any 12 year old knows you can't do that.
I know you can't do that. It's copyright infringement. It's using his likeness without his permission. And so they make this just a regular lager beer, and Sanders immediately gets him to stop. It was a really bad move because it's a great brewery and it's not a bad idea. So. People make mistakes. Let's talk about the.
And let's talk about Eli's alma mater. The scene was Chrysler Arena, opening game of the season against a good Bowling Green team, folks. Wednesday night, you see the empty Chrysler. It didn't look anywhere near as good as Breslin did in East Lansing. And right at the start, the clock malfunctions. Yeah. I kid you not. If you didn't see this, they tip the ball. And the clock immediately malfunctions. Is that fitting in this year or what? And then, of course, ESPN starts that obnoxious crawl at the bottom of the screen and the COVID cancellations we mentioned already. And then, of course, we see number 9 Kentucky has suspended preseason first team All-American guard Ryan Howard for not the ever popular violation of team rules. It was for, quote, not upholding the standards of the program. And you're sitting there thinking, wow, Kentucky's going to be without its top player. Wait a minute. Ryan is a girl. It's only girls basketball they're talking about. Man, these crawls are driving me not to drink, to drink more.
How about the crawl? I have to do a double take that Vanderbilt is going to have a female kicker because all the male kickers are in COVID quarantine.
What's her range? What is her range?
I don't know, but I'm thinking, wow, there's no way a woman can ever make a college football team because of the power in her legs. She can't kick it as far. Hey, maybe she's obviously very accurate, and maybe they won't try anything more than 40 or 45 yards.
So, you know, that's a good Bowling Green team, folks. It was a preseason pick to win the MAC this year. And Michigan pretty much throttled them, 96-82. You heard it right here on this program from Larry Sorensen, who does the Wake Forest games. I asked him about this transfer, Sean D. Brown. Mm-hmm. Juwan picked him off this, I'll say waiver wire in college basketball, the transfer portal. God, he looked great. Boy, is he going to help Michigan. I was really impressed by that. Michigan on Sunday next plays an Oakland team. Did you see the Oakland scores? No. You know, Greg Campy's been sick with COVID, or at least he's had COVID, probably not sick. They lost to Xavier in their opening game 101-49, and then Toledo beat Oakland by 27. That could get pretty ugly at Chrysler come Sunday.
Let's go back to my Wolverines, okay? Yes, Sean D. Brown looks like a great transfer.
Wow.
And the new Xavier Simpson / Drew.
Michael Smith. I didn't even know who that kid was. Mike Smith. He played at Columbia?
But remember when we were kids, we had the Davy Crockett coonskin hats?
Yes, we did.
That's what his hair looks like. It's hilarious.
Yeah, I know.
I'd say he's got a coonskin hat on. Fascinating.
Hunter Dickinson, that 7'1"
I liked
that
him.
They got. Yeah, he looked good.
He looked very good. I'm thinking, of course, he's making little lefty shots from under the basket, and the guy he's 6 inches taller than the next tallest guy in their team. But still, he's got some nice moves, and you know, Howard has a way of pulling these guys in, these big players. The freshman Terrence Williams looked pretty good. So they lost. Who they lost? They lost Simpson. They lost.
I didn't think Wagner did look that good, particularly. I mean, they would say, "Well, man, this guy's going to carry this team." But Livers is Livers, you know. He's a really good player.
And they lost Teske. But I think Dickinson will be an easy replacement.
Yeah, I think so too. And then did you? I presume you also watched the Michigan State game. We alluded to it, the fact that Eastern Michigan dressed 8 guys.
Yeah.
As well with COVID, and when Miles Gibson of Eastern hit a 3-pointer to cap a 9-0 run, Eastern Michigan led Michigan State 19-17 with 8:40 to go in the first half. But that was it. Foster Lawyer had a new career high of 17 in the first half alone.
That meant nothing. They're playing an undermanned team.
But not only that, Eli, if you look at a zone defense, there are only a couple of reasons to play it. Number one, if you don't match up, or if you got a bad shooting opponent, but you don't rebound as well out of a zone. And if you got a good shooting team, they're going to kill you. And that's what Foster did. Now, he wasn't Mr. Basketball for nothing, but you're not going to see any more of these zones. So when you see Michigan State playing Notre Dame on Saturday night and Duke next week, this ain't going to be the same Foster Lawyer. I guarantee you they're nearly shut him down.
They're ranked. It's interesting. Seven Big Ten teams are ranked in the top 25. So it's the best conference for basketball, obviously, out there. But they get Langford back. Josh Langford, who's
great story,
hasn't played in 2 years. He was really tentative the first half of that game. He didn't move at all. But so they're basically, they lose 2 guys who were drafted when you're drafted in the NBA, that's only 60 players get drafted. That's big. So they lose Cassius Winston and Spencer Xavier Tillman. Xavier Tillman, and they get back Langford to replace Winston, maybe, and Joey Hauser. I don't know how good he is. He's a transfer.
I saw him play at Marquette quite a bit. Yeah. He's a very good player, but he was nervous too in the opening part of that game. And Jess Settles, who was doing the color commentary, referred to Cassius Winston as, I quote, one of the greatest players in the history of college basketball. Really?
Jeez. Who said that?
Really?
Those guys were awful, by the way, that announcing team.
Yeah, and I do want to say this, though. You know, I always beat up Gonzaga because they're always so highly ranked and they're playing in that B BS, you know, mid-major Mickey Mouse West Coast Conference. They're winning games against Santa Clara, St. Mary's, Pacific, and Pepperdine. Well, let me tell you something. They put up 102 against Kansas in the opening game Thanksgiving afternoon, and they got three great players. Drew Timmy, Jalen Suggs, a freshman. Wait till you see that kid. And Corey Kispert. I think Gonzaga's for real.
They always look for real, don't they? Every year they look for real.
Now, they're not to me, Denny, because they have good players, but again, they're not playing anybody. But this time, this is Kansas they were playing. Mm-hmm. As we record this program, ironically, Friday morning, they're playing Auburn right now, and I don't think they're going to have any problems with that. I'm recording that game. And poor University of Detroit. What are they thinking of? They got one person in the program, not a player, who tests positive for COVID, and they canceled the big weekend trip to Kentucky. Is this shades of what happened with the football game between Clemson and Florida State? One guy with COVID, and they canceled the game, and old Dabo says afterwards, that's nonsense. They just didn't want to play us. I wonder if the University of Detroit really wanted to play. They should have been playing Kentucky tonight.
One thing about it is it's the protocol. It's not them. It's the protocol. If they're going to stay in the association, they got to play according to the protocol. Exactly. I mean, that's the name of the game right now. By the way, one little clip here. Do you know bad at times pays good? Alex Cora got the job back at the Red Sox.
Yeah. Good for him.
We know that.
Good for him? Oh.
And just to make, since Bob loves to see players get paid, I'm sure you were thrilled to see some of those NBA contracts. My goodness, five for 190.
Incredible. We talked about the last show when you weren't here. It's unbelievable.
Five for 163 is the basic. But yeah.
And you know, I like Gordon Hayward just fine, but the guy's always hurt. And how much money did he get to leave the Celtics? You wouldn't take a chance. I mean, they're insuring his contract, but jeez. Wow.
Well, he got Bam Adebayo, 5, $195.
To stay in Miami.
Guaranteed. You got Donovan Mitchell, the same thing, 5, $195.
Yeah, Denny mentioned him. Yeah.
And Jason Tatum and De'Aaron Fox, 5 for $195. Now, the reason only 163 is guaranteed is because if the salary cap goes up, they get more money. So obviously, with no fans in the stands and seasons that are truncated, the money is still there in the NBA. Now, there's a couple of more stories. We don't want to go on too much longer here because we're up to over 40 minutes in the show.
At the age of the three of us, we're not going to go on too much longer. I guarantee you that much.
I have time in 20 minutes.
I know,
and I'm talking about the show.
Do you understand? Are you familiar with the event that's going to take place?
The what?
The event that'll be taking place Saturday.
I was hoping you and Brandon would tell us it's finally been called off.
At the Staples
Common
Center.
Common sense.
No, but it's $50 pay-per-view.
Yeah.
See, this is how boxing works now. And it is, and it's an and we're talking about the exhibition between Mike Tyson and Roy Jones. So they're going to wear 12-ounce gloves, which are like pillows, by the way, because gloves are, for most fights, are 6 or 8 ounces, so they're like little pillows. It's going to be a hard sparring session, as all the executive director of the California State Athletic Commission will call it. That knockouts were being discouraged. There's going to be no judging of the fight. And Mike Tyson's going to make $10 million, Roy Jones $3 million. But Tyson says he's going to give all of his to charity. You see, there's a cult of about 500,000 people who are hardcore boxing fans. That's about it. The ratings for other boxing on television is very, very low. But that 500,000 are the ones that'll pay $50 to $100.
Isn't there a welterweight championship fight for a Saturday night? And they're charging pay-per-view for that too, aren't they?
That's all part of it. That's
that's part of the card.
That's part of the card. But
yeah, Tyson's 54, Jones is 51. And did you see, this big podcast, Joe Rogan, Mike was on it a little while ago. And he was asked about, what are you doing in preparation for this big fight? Have you changed your diet? Tyson says, yeah, he has changed his diet. He says, and I quote, now I'm only eating elk and bison, the wild stuff, and I'm starting to feel fit. I realize the stuff that's good for other people, like kale, vegetables, and blueberries, for me is really poisonous. Kale will kill me, end quote.
He also says, if I fail, I'm going to die. How many people are going
to die anyway?
He goes, that's
you said to me on the phone there was a George Bernard Shaw's famous quote. Odds show that one out of every one person dies.
That is a fact. anyway.
All right. Okay. I got one for Denny now. Okay. I got one. Denny tried to fit it in just a moment ago, and I don't blame him because he was such a great pitcher in his day, and baseball is his game. So let's get back to that for a second. We all remember one of the worst things any of us have ever seen when Blake Snell was pulled from the World Series by Kevin Cash, that 1-0 lead. So now, in the wake of the reaction of Snell being pulled and dropping an F-bomb while horrors, he scrunched his face in disbelief, as all of us did. The Rays have told other teams in Major League Baseball that they're open to trading him. Really? Now, another consideration is the Rays' history. They eventually trade all the top talent they develop, from David Price to Evan Longoria.
Yeah.
And the revenues lost due to COVID-19 pandemic's impact on baseball exacerbates their situation. It's not a big market. Snell has 3 years, $39 million remaining on a five-year deal. But I want to ask you this question. Our former guest twice on this show, Dick Vitale, is there any bigger Tampa Bay Rays fan than Dick Vitale? So when you run a franchise like the Rays are, and when you let it be known to your few fans that you're thinking about trading your mainstay, how is it possible to remain a fan of that team?
I have no idea. It's like the Washington Senators. I mean, you lose. Nobody shows up. You know, we had more employees work in the ballpark the last week in Washington, D.C., than we had players on the field. I mean, it was crazy that week. Mm. And, you know, people just want a winner in some form. They
exactly.
want to be entertained. That's what
exactly.
they want.
They win. They can move yeah. players in
winning
and out.
Winning is everything. Yes, sir, Brandon.
To me, this is Blake Snell wanting to get out. When you take a look at the Tampa Bay Rays and you look at their philosophy of pitching, this guy cannot and will not pitch after the sixth inning. I think he's a guy who believes in himself, and he wants to go to a club that will let him possibly complete a game or at least stay in and remain competitive.
Seven innings.
You got these openers now that I think they're using in a lot of other ball clubs. Imagine going Mayo Smith walking out to Denny or Lolich. Well, that's your one inning. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it. Now let's go to the bullpen.
Can I? I want to get into insanity a little bit more with this story. I'm sure you saw. And I'm sure when Bob does his obituaries, he's going to talk about the death of Diego Maradona.
That's the big thing. Yeah.
So here you've got tens of thousands of people mourning Diego Maradona in the streets of Buenos Aires. Of course, the police had to come in because they weren't socially distanced and all that. And here you have an international star that we in America, who cares? I mean,
yeah, we don't really know.
Wasn't that the guy that hit the handball in? Isn't he the guy who was a drug addict? Isn't he the guy, you know, that was kicked out of league after league because of, you know, off the field stuff and everything? But he is beloved and for good reason. Came from the shanty in Buenos Aires. He also had 11 children from a variety of relationships.
Holy Maroney.
And yet...
Well, I thought you said this guy's a soccer player. It sounds like he's an NBA player.
I don't know if anyone had 11, but 11 is pretty good. In fact, the president of Argentina said eulogized him, saying, "You took us to the top of the world. You made us immensely happy. You were the greatest of all." And I guess 98% of American sports fans, I would guess, barely noticed because soccer obviously is the fringe part.
On Friday, they had his body out for open viewing in front of the presidential palace. And by the way, folks, if you've never been to Buenos Aires, they call it the Paris of South America for a reason. One of the most beautiful cities you will ever see. So the family wanted the body removed for burial at 6 p.m., but the lines were so long to see him that the people started to riot. So they had a riot on Friday in the streets of Buenos Aires over this situation right here. And again, you were four American guys sitting right here on this show right now. And if Diego Maradona had sat next to us on a bus, we probably wouldn't have recognized him. But that's just the United States. As you say, Eli, who's bigger than this guy? Pele, and this guy recognized the world over. Now Lionel Messi, another Argentinian.
Well, I know one thing with his resume, and if he was in the United States with all four professional teams that we have, he'd be a star on any team with that resume.
Absolutely. Well, you know,
11 children, 48 cars, 13 homes, you know, all that stuff, that all counts.
And then, of course, eventually to lose it all.
Yeah.
Well, you know, because we in America have our own universe of
sports. We have our own sports.
Now, American football is only American football. They don't play it anywhere else. Basketball, which became an international sport in the last 20 or 30 years, is also that way. Baseball was. It wasn't until the late 60s that even a foreign player ever made it to the major leagues. So I was thinking, because we did the obituary the other day on Paul Hornung, And so I'm thinking about Horning and how in the rest of the world didn't even notice, but to us, what an incredible character he was. And I want to.
I got Brandon, a story for you. About
I got a story. Okay, I got one too. I think we got to say goodbye to our radio audience. Let's say goodbye to WCWA in Toledo.
Toledo, thank you.
Thank you. You've been listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast down there. So Horning was the golden boy from Notre Dame, Heisman Trophy winner in 56. And when the Packers were in their prime, like 3 or 4 years later, because they drafted him number one, by the way, because they had finished last. 4 years later, they were contending.
He was a quarterback at Notre Dame.
And so he was the great playboy, you know, with that power sweep. And so I remember reading in Sports Illustrated, I'm a kid, I'm 17 years old, and finally the bachelor Paul Horning, at the age of 31, marries a model named Patricia Roeder. And he has the wedding in Maui. And the wedding is scheduled for 9 o'clock in the morning. And the reporter says to him, "Why did you schedule the wedding so early?" And Horning says, "Because if it doesn't work out, I don't want to blow the whole day."
Yeah. And I'll tell you something else about Paul Horning. I bet you red-blooded American boys here remember this. I don't know if it was second, third, seventh, or eighth wife or whatever it is. She was so old. She was like 50 or 52, and she did this nude layout in Playboy. And I remember as a very young guy, look at that. Oh, my God, that's like your grandmother. She still had a great body, but I remember thinking, oh, 50 is so old, and look at how amazing she still looks.
He and I were doing a significant card show at the Riviera Hotel. The Riviera used to be owned by a bunch of guys from Detroit. And it was only him and I Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And we had a great turnout, great crowd. And when we first got there, he changed all the tables around. He changed all the chairs around. And so he could see the races around the world while we're signing autographs. And you know what? On Saturday afternoon, he gave me 6 winners in a row.
Oh, wow.
And 2 of them were in, Brunei. And lo and behold.
It sounds like it's in Kentucky. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say Kentucky. And then after six straight winners, and then he looked at me and he says, "Listen, you didn't give me any commission." I said, "How much do you want? I want to do this the rest of my life." He says, "No, I can't do it." He says, "There were some things that came down the wire today." I said, "Oh, I don't want to know. Yeah. I don't want to know."
One of Eli's boyhood broadcasting heroes was the longtime legendary New York Mets announcer, Lindsey Nelson. Oh, yeah. So how about a show of hands out there in the peanut gallery for those of you over 50, which is probably most of you, who remember every Sunday morning watching Lindsey Nelson and Paul Horning do the Notre Dame highlights from the previous day.
And Lindsey would always have like a plaid suit on or something like that. Horning and Alex Karras were suspended in 63 for gambling. And he did admit that he bet on Packers games, but it took him 15 years to get in the Hall of Fame, and it took Karras until just last year to get in the Hall of Fame. Yeah. But so the late Ron Kramer, who I loved, who was a Michigan guy and a
wonderful guy,
Packer and a liar, a great guy. So I run into him at Michigan Stadium going to a game, I'd say 15 years ago. And we happened to be walking in together and we're talking. He said, "Come on over to the gate 9 is where they did the will call." And he said, "Well, hang out. I'm waiting for a friend." So I hang out. I'm talking to him. "Who's the friend?" Guy walks up. He goes, "Hey, Paul, here's your ticket. Hey, Eli, Paul Horning. Hi, Paul, Eli." And that was the end. I go, "Whoa." Yeah. He didn't even tell me that the friend was Paul Horning. Paul stinking Horning shows up to get a ticket.
And then, you know, I don't know if he was a drunk, but he sure had a drinking problem. And he just blew up on the air on that radio show one night when he went off on Notre Dame. He bit the proverbial hand that fed him when he talked about Notre Dame lowering its academic standards specifically to get black athletes in the university so they could play football at Notre Dame. I highly doubt Paul Horning was a racist. And of course, there was more than a modicum of truth to what he was talking about.
Absolutely.
But at that point in time, of course, that was it. No more Paul Horning.
He quit the school's radio.
Paul Horning was just a great guy. I'm telling you, he didn't have a racist bone in his whole body. I mean, he was just one of those guys. You know what you'd like to do? Like I said about Ted Williams many years ago, I would love to just sit and talk with Williams for 2 or 3 hours with Paul, I'd like to sit and talk to him for 6 hours.
Oh,
that's
God.
How entertaining Paul was.
When I'm a kid, I'm 11 years old, and they come in and they beat the Giants 37-0 to win the NFL championship. Oh, yeah. This is pretty. And in that game, it's a 37-0. He scored 19 points on his own with a touchdown. He ran for one, kicked three or four field goals and the extra points. I go,
straight ahead field goals before the Gogolak brothers revolutionized kicking.
Well, we got a little mailbag, hopefully a little mailbag, and we got this day in sports. But first, I want to say Feldman Automotive, Michigan's number one Chevy dealer, 5 locations, Novi, New Hudson, Lansing, Livonia, and Highland. Feldman with 9 locations in all, including Hyundai of New Hudson, Kia of Novi, Dodge, Jeep, and Ram of Woodhaven, and Michigan's number one pre-owned supercenter in Waterford, which we simply call 1-800-PRE-OWNED because it is the biggest and the best, where you can buy a fully inspected and guaranteed pre-owned auto and get an exclusive drive for 3 days. Love it or bring it back guarantee. You can't beat that, along with guaranteed credit approval. So you can find what you want. They got 9 locations. Go see Feldman. Their massive inventory is unmatched in all of Metro Detroit. You can buy online at FeldmanAuto.com with an effortless, hassle-free experience. We talked earlier about that incredible black and white Barry Sanders spot for Power Home Solar. Brilliant spot, and shows you that the company really knows what it's doing. It is the fastest growing solar company in the world, based right here in Metro Detroit. Every one of their state-of-the-art panels made in America. You save money, you save the environment, at least help doing it, do your part, and never again suffer a costly power outage because they do partner with Generac, largest provider of in-home backup battery and generator systems, so you're protected all the way through. Lower your energy bills, eliminate power outages for good. Do what Barry Sanders does. Support Power Home Solar. Financing starting at $99 a month. Call them at 1-800-POWER-90. Save an additional $2,000. Okay, this day in sports.
This day in sports.
1940, Tom Harmon won the 6th Heisman Trophy. Trivia question, guys, remember the first Heisman Trophy winner in 1935? He was?
Jay Berwanger, University of Chicago.
Nicely done. 56 is when Horning was the first pick in the draft. They drafted this day out of Notre Dame. 1960, Gordie Howe became the first to 1,000 points. 64, I'll never remember this, 65 NFL draft. As a matter of fact, Tucker Fredrickson, first pitch by the Giants. We go, huh? Who? That's the best guy you can pick. He flamed out pretty quick. 1963, Pete Rose named Rookie of the Year on this day. In 68, OJ won the Heisman on this day. And something that impacted Detroit sports very, very much. In 1978, the Reds fired Sparky Anderson, who showed up here early in the following season.
Right after Jim Campbell fired Les Moss, who worked his ass off, paid his dues, deserved that job, prompting the great Frank Robinson to say, "What Detroit did to Les Moss was the worst thing I've ever seen in baseball."
Quote, well, it was unquote. The best thing for guys like me because Sparky was a far better interview than Les Moss.
Well, that's for sure.
All I cared about at the time. And in 1999, Steve Eiserman got his 600th on this day. And those are some things going on this day in sports.
And now the mailbag.
And now, what we've all been waiting for, we never came up with theme music, a little drum roll. Go ahead, mailbag.
See you sound the excited. USA you see, in your mail truck.
I'm excited.
Everybody's ready it's good for you to take a little time I'm excited off, Eli. You're excited about the mailbag now.
Yeah, I'm excited when it starts. Give me 90 seconds and tell me what I think, but go ahead.
As usual. But that's only part of the story because nobody except the four of us can see our little Zoom closed circuit feed here to watch Mr. Ants in his pants fidgeting in his chair the longer the mailbag goes.
Putting my head in my hands like Sheila Hamp Ford.
That's your specialty, too. All right, folks. Eli is not going to consort with you peons any longer. He has resigned from Twitter. It doesn't matter what you say to Eli, he's just above answering you. But that's not the case with Denny McClain. You can definitely tweet Denny at MU2 Denny, or you can tweet me at Bob Page Sports. And here's James Harris, who wants to comment on the Greg Landry interview we did. He said, as a seven, and this is kind of cool, actually. He says, as a 7-year-old, I remember Greg Landry was the quarterback for the Lions. I made a number 11 jersey from a blue sweatshirt and 2 stripes that I cut out of a white sheet. My mother was not happy about that, but I had my Greg Landry jersey. Great podcast, fellas. I love the discussion about COVID-19 sports. Very interesting times we live in. But think about that. Eli, when you and I were boys growing up, you were a big Mets fan. I was, of course, a big Tigers fan. God, if I could have bought a jersey or a T-shirt with Al Kaline's name on the back and a number six. So they didn't have them.
Right.
Somebody invented them. And here's James Harris saying when he was 7 years old, he essentially invented the concept. He did not, unfortunately, copyright the concept.
I think Don Cannon was the first one to sell like licensed gear. And remember, you'd see back then, you'd say property of University of Michigan Athletics or property of something.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
The first T-shirts that came out.
Yeah, I remember something like that.
Yeah.
Cannon, I think you're right. He was a part of that.
Yeah.
And now, unfortunately, what's happened to this concept, unfortunately, now is if you want to, you can get a mask during these COVID times that has a picture of Danny McLean's high leg kick, number 17 on
it. Where can you get that?
He did that a while ago. So I said, send me one of those. He says to me, give me $20. You think I'm kidding you? You think I'm kidding you? I still don't have my Danny McLean COVID mask, damn it.
Did you send the 20?
No, I'm not going to send you 20.
No, I'll just take 20 off your check this month and put it on Danny.
Yeah, give it to Danny. Give it to Denny.
All right, keep going.
On the Terry Mills interview, Robbie in Arizona says, great show. I love Terry Mills' spin on John Beilein. I miss Eli Zarrett. Paul Carone writes, Terry Mills' story about Bo addressing the Michigan hoops team after he fired Bill Frieder was priceless. Greg Landry having 17 grandchildren now was incredible to hear. The No Filter Sports podcast continues to be outstanding. Well done, guys. But Paul did take us to task on the Landry interview, too. And I'm going to bring that up when we talk about the Pro Football Hall of Fame and other things with Rick Goslin, the longtime columnist of the Dallas Morning News, national pro football columnist, who's a big mover and shaker behind the scenes in Canton. Now, Eli's saying on the show recently that he just doesn't want to talk about the Pistons. He didn't care about the Pistons. They don't interest him. So Tiger Mike 1975 tweeted, you know, being honest, I've had little Pistons interest myself the last decade. But these new moves they just made, the new GM, Troy Weaver, just made, have kind of rekindled my interest. None of my friends care about the Detroit Pistons. I couldn't get people to go for free with me last year.
Yeah.
So you think about that. They got this gorgeous new arena the Pistons and the Wings play in Detroit. And so here's Mike calling his buddies to give them a couple extra tickets he's got to a Pistons game, and nobody takes them.
Oh.
That's what it's come to, some people.
They have not won a playoff game.
Right.
People are spoiled.
2008.
How else have they done since the Lambeer, Isaiah days? I mean, give me a break. Come on, this team's been a great franchise.
They were good from about 2002 to 2009.
They won with that other group too. Yeah, won an NBA title with them. I mean, come on.
But what have you done for me lately? They have not won a playoff game in 12, going on 13. 13 years.
I know.
There's just no, and now their two best players want to get out of town. You think Blake Griffin wants to be here? You think Derrick Rose, both the end of their careers, want to be here? And all you got after that is a bunch of unproven players who are going to, again, lead them to how many games are they going to play? 70?
Yeah.
They'll be 25 and 45.
Yeah, I know Blake has a reputation of being a really, really nice young man. I'm sure he is. He better shut up because he's been stealing money. He's always hurt. He's making millions. Be happy. Be happy.
He didn't say that out loud. He didn't say it out loud.
Yeah, I know that. But if that's the case, you know what I'm saying? Tom Bell writes us from Chicago. Guys, it's sort of a softball interview you did with Terry Mills. Why not ask Terry if he knew Ed Martin? Wouldn't that have been a relevant question? It was Martin and Steve Fisher who brought down the whole Michigan program and caused banners to be removed. The U of M compromised its academics with athletics more than any other academic institution out there, and they probably still do. P.S. I sent a small donation. Wish I could help more. I love the show, guys. And you know what? We haven't promoted that in a while. But if you want to contribute to the show, and you go to our website, and there is a donation button, then we appreciate anything that you'd like to do. And Eli, guess what? Finally, that's the magic word for you. Finally, website submissions at nofiltersportspodcast.com, or you can email us. asknofilter@gmail.com, or you can call or text us and leave a message, 760 760- 8-9 balls. And here's Mark McAllister, who writes, boy, it was great to hear from Terry Mills on your show. I'm a Romulus High School graduate, class of 89, who left the Detroit area as a member of the military. I was a freshman during the title run of 86, and I took trips around the state to see Romulus High School beat some really great teams, including Anderson Hunt and Detroit Southwestern in the finals. I retired from the military, and I worked for the Air Force as a civilian in Georgia, and I love the podcast, hearing from my childhood heroes. Keep up the great work, fellas, and know that you have a loyal listener in Middle Georgia. And Mark, I want to tell you that we thank you for your service to our country. And good. With that, let's stop go to right our there. Guest.
Rick Goslin, Detroiter, St. Ambrose High, I guess that's Grosse Pointe, went to Michigan State. I assume studied broadcasting or journalism or something like that back during the Bob Page era there. Just retired a couple of years ago from the newspaper business, 27 years with the Dallas Morning Star covering the Cowboys. He's covered the NFL for many, many years, been a columnist. And I guess, although you
remember the Pro Football Hall of Fame writers wing, didn't Jerry Jones actually, did he introduce you and give the speech? Was that part of the deal, Rick?
No, in my background with Jerry, I was in the bar in Orlando when he decided that he'd had enough of Jimmy Johnson. We broke the story, myself and Ed Werder, who's now at ESPN.
Oh, okay.
We go back a long way.
I'm sure you do.
and really, you mentioned in some articles that I read on you, one of the joys of being a sports writer for all those years was the personal moments you spent with Bill Cowher, watching his daughter play basketball and being in the bar with Jerry Jones. It must have been tough leaving the newspaper business, which, of course, has been under a lot of pressure for a long time. Was that a tough decision? And do you miss the daily grind of the newspaper business?
No, I said I was glad I got in when I got in and got out when I got out, because in today's world, you couldn't establish the relationships that I was able to establish during my career. I mean, when I was in Kansas City, I could go anywhere in the building. I could go in the training room. I go down to the head coach's office every morning, get a cup of coffee. In today's NFL, you're locked out. You have to have passcodes to enter any door. So I couldn't have developed the relationships that I had over the years with the Cowers and the Dungies and the Bruce Arians and the Jerry Jones.
Well, not only that, but the newspaper business was paramount back then. What's happened to the newspaper business reflects what's happened in local radio and television. We're all very lucky that we were able to be in it when people read and watched and listened to what we did, and there was money in it too, because that's all gone also.
We all didn't get rich like you guys.
Well, we chose the electronic way to go, as Jerry Green called us, electronic media marvels, and Jerry's term for you guys, ink-stained wretches. And that's what you were, Goslin, all those years. After we played Little League baseball against each other in Grosse Pointe Park when we were both 12 years old. That was a long time ago, Rick.
I remember, there's one thing I remember about my Little League days. I was a pitcher, and I threw one no-hitter, and it was against the White Sox.
My team.
So did Denny. No, it's a one hitter you threw against.
One hitter against.
Right. Your job to Bruce Howard in 1992. Yeah. That's too funny.
Hey, listen, Rick. Question for you. We all see and we hear nasty things about Jerry Jones. I've only met him one time, and that was like 7 seconds. He said, "Get out of here, McLean." So, what kind of a guy is he really? Is he good to his folks? Is he good to the fans? I mean,
and what's wrong with the Cowboys now?
Good question. Yeah.
And what the hell is wrong with my Cowboys?
Well, Jerry is great. I'd put him in the top five guys I've ever dealt with, because he has the thickest skin. You could rip him to shreds on one day, and the next day he's coming up and smiling at you and shaking your hand, and it's like you never wrote anything. I mean, his philosophy is, I don't care what you write about me, as long as you spell Cowboys right in the headline. It's all about branding. That's why he's got the most valuable sporting franchise in the world. He hasn't won a Super Bowl in 25 years, but he's got the most valuable sporting franchise in the world. It's all about the branding. He's a great guy.
And his total immersion in the team. We've talked about him lately in terms of the Ford family, which is in another crisis now. And one of the things that a longtime Ford or Lion employee told me was that they're never really there. They're owners, but they're not. They don't have their nose in it every day. And Jerry Jones just seemed from the beginning, no matter what you thought of him, and of course it's all third person, his immersion into the team, his desire to win, his willingness to just be a part of everything is so different than what we've had here. You've noticed that, I'm sure, also.
Yeah, the problem is when he bought the team, he had been a college teammate with Jimmy Johnson. And he sold Jimmy that, hey, you come on up here, you run the football side, I'll run the business side. And it was in Jimmy's contract that he had final say over all personnel decisions. Well, when they started winning, Jerry had gotten ripped the first year when they went 1-15 for all the losses. When they started getting good, Jimmy was getting all the credit. And Jerry's thinking, why am I not getting any credit? I got all the criticism. How come I'm not getting any credit? So after they won the first Super Bowl, he went to Jimmy, wanted to extend him, but he wanted to get the clause out of the contract about the personnel because Jerry wanted to be the GM. And Jimmy said no. And after they won the second year again, that was still an issue because the two egos weren't going to survive in the same building. So Jimmy got pushed out. And since then, Jerry's been obsessed with trying to win a Super Bowl without Jimmy. He won it in 95 with Jimmy's players. And he's been trying to win one to show people what a football guy he is. He's trying to win a Super Bowl on his own, and he hasn't been able to do that.
Yeah. Boy, pettiness can really bring down an empire, can it?
Tell me about it. I've watched it for the last quarter of a century.
I got a question from one of the listeners, Rick, and I think it's something that everybody would like to know. We saw the Cowboys, and as usual, we saw what I call the FLs, the Lions, and the Thanksgiving Day games. How do they keep these games? Because doesn't everybody wants to be in the Thanksgiving Day game, but Detroit keeps hits and Dallas keeps hits?
The history thing. I mean, Detroit started it. I think that the league does still have a keen sense of history, and the Cowboys have been doing it longer than anybody else. And the Cowboys, of course, have been the marquee team for the first 50 years of that game. Not much so now, but I think there's a keen respect for history. I know they talked about taking the game away from the Lions 1 year. I think Bill Ford went in and gave an impassioned plea to keep it. And I get that. It's their game. You'd think that it's cyclical. The teams get good and bad, that they're going to get good at some point. You know, we've been waiting on the Lions, and, it looks like we're going to be waiting on the Cowboys too.
What did you do all those years? And this is the line you got to draw or you got to dance over when you are covering the team for a newspaper, but you need to be close to the team in order to get the good stuff. And all the stuff we heard about the Michael Irvin era and the drugs and the house where they'd meet, do all that. I'm sure you knew a lot about it. How did you dance that line between reporting it and saying, if I really say this, I'm never going to be able to eat a free meal in that clubhouse again?
I didn't know about the White House. And secondly, they hired me to cover the Cowboys because I had a relationship with Jimmy Johnson. I knew Jimmy and his staff at Oklahoma State in 1979. So the Morning News hired me in 90 because of my relationships with that staff. So I walked into the building with better sources than the guys who'd been covering the teams. After 2 years, they figured out I knew more people in the NFL than the Cowboys beat guy did. So they flipped us. So in 1992, I went off the Cowboys and onto the NFL. For the next 20 years, I had the best job in America. I picked any game I wanted to every week of the season, as long as it wasn't the Cowboys. So I just covered great football for 20 years. You became pretty famous, Rick.
You became the go-to guy in NFL circles, one of the most prominent football writers in America. And for a kid from the east side of Detroit, that had to make you feel pretty good.
Yeah, thanks, Bob. I developed pretty good relationships. I got to know everybody. Belichick, Parcells, Coward Dungy. When you're in their buildings every year, they see you. And I had always, for 40 years, I'd done these NFL special teams rankings, which all the teams have. Get and want. And in fact, there were some coaches, special teams coaches, who had clauses in their contracts that they got a bonus based on where they finished in my rankings. That's how credible the rankings were. So I had great relations. But going back to what Eli said, I wasn't there around the Cowboys from 92, when all this stuff was going on. I was there before they became the triplets. I knew Aikman, Smith, and Irvin before they became the triplets. So I saw this team in the developmental stage, not the championship stage, when it got completely out of control.
You also became, in the process, one of the prime movers and shakers behind the scenes in Canton in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. I want to ask you, first of all, how it's determined how many guys are voting? How is it determined whether a guy gets in or doesn't get in?
Well, there's a voting board of 48 now. Once upon a time, it was 33. It was the third 29. It was the 28 established franchises and one at-large person, the Pro Football Writers president. I first went on the board in 1988 as the Kansas City rep, and I spent 3 years doing that. And then I moved to Dallas, but they already had their guy. So in 2001, I believe, I became the Dallas rep. So I this is my 25th year on the committee. I'm the only guy on both the senior committee and the contributor committee. So I'm the only guy in that. And I carry some weight in the senior room. I long felt that the best guy not in Canton was Jerry Kramer. We got him in. And then I thought after that, the best guy not in was Johnny Robinson. We got him in. And then my next guy I thought was Alex Karras. And we finally got him in the centennial class. So, you know, when you're in that room for so many years, and I've been in a room for 25 years, your voice carries some weight.
Well, I don't understand this about baseball either. How come a guy's not a Hall of Famer, then all of a sudden 20 years later, oh, he's a Hall of Famer? It doesn't seem right. You either are or you're not.
Well, baseball is different than football. Baseball, you can vote for 10, and as many as 10 can get in. Now, 10 never do.
Never.
I vote on both. But football, there are so many, there are more teams, more players, and there are so many quality candidates. We only get to pick 5. And no matter which 5 we pick, it's the wrong 5 because we didn't pick your guy.
Well, so, it's impossible. I mean, this year alone, you got Peyton Manning, Charles Woodson, and Calvin Johnson. That's 3. They got to go in. That leaves 2 spaces for the other 27 guys that are being nominated this year. And some like John Lynch have been up 9 years. You got some guys that have been up. Tony Baselli's been up 6 years.
But
Steve Tasker's been up 8 years.
It happens in baseball, too.
But do you usually get 3 automatics like you have this year? And are they automatics?
Well, I think they're 2 automatics.
Yeah, like I don't think Calvin Johnson necessarily.
I'm not sure about Calvin Johnson.
Okay.
He certainly passed the eye test in my book. But you look at, we've got 10 all-decade wide receivers in the senior pool. Guys that didn't go in.
Man.
And you could pick a 10-member senior class just of wide receivers. And you got, what, 4 receivers on this ballot. And Calvin's a first team all-decade guy. Torrey Holt was a second team guy. It's going to be tough. Alan Fanick has got to go in this class. He's got the best resume of anybody.
But
he's
Rick,
been passed over.
Okay, fine. Fanica was a great offensive lineman. But that leads me to another question about this. Sure. You look at the numbers of quarterbacks, wideouts, you look at running backs. How the hell do you determine offensive linemen? Who's in a Hall of Famer and who's not?
That's a great question.
I mean, nobody knows.
Yeah, there's no stats. Here's a couple things. One, of all the people in Canton, 69% won championships. So that's the edge you've got if you won a championship.
So unfair, I think, but go ahead. I'm sorry. It's
okay. And also, if you were an all-decade player, 73% of all all-decade players get in. So if you didn't win a championship and you weren't on the all-decade team, you are a long shot at best. So those are two markers that.
Well, again, for offensive linemen and all, I mean, to me, look, Tony Baselli was a great player. He was hurt and he didn't play as long as some guys, but to me, that's a Hall of Famer and he's not in. I don't know, man. That's why you're here to explain this.
Was Will Shields. He had the best resume. He started his second game of his career. He played 13 seasons. He went to 12 Pro Bowls. He was a first team all decade guy. And he was sliding. I thought we were going to get him in the senior pool. He had never won a championship. And if you didn't win a championship, it's very, very tough. I'll tell you a guy that one of the best guys not in Canton is a guy named George Koontz.
Oh, yeah.
He was offensive tackle at Notre Dame in the 60s.
Yeah.
Second overall pick of a draft. He played, I think, 11 seasons, and he was healthy in 8 of them. And he went to the Pro Bowl all 8. In 2 different conferences, 4 with the Falcons, 4 with the Colts.
And you guys didn't think he was good enough.
He never came up. No, that's the problem I've got. We don't cycle enough people through the room. And that's the John Lynch thing. A guy keeps staying in until he finally gets elected. I was in a meeting in Canton 1 year with the Hall of Fame people and Dan Rooney. And Dan asked me, what's the problem? I said, the problem. I says, you're the problem. I says, we had Lynn Swann and John Stallworth on the ballot for 12 consecutive years. That's 24 people we couldn't talk about as we were hashing through Lynn Swann and John Stallworth, who both got in, by the way. So if you guys get in, then they stay on the ballot until they get in. And that's what Lynch's deal. He's probably...
That's a Hall of Famer, Rick. John Lynch was a Hall of Fame safety player.
There isn't enough room. You said earlier, to switch gears here for a moment, you know, all of us, I don't mean Denny because he was a player, but Bob and I, we were geeky sports fans as kids, you know? I mean, I read Sport Magazine cover to cover. When the Sunday paper would come out, I would look at every batting average. It was like amazing. Now, you became a draft expert, and to me, and this is just me, not you, nothing is more hopeless than to try to do mock drafts, and yet you and your research were considered the best there was, and you would pour through hundreds and hundreds of scouting reports. Did you find that to be
Watching a lot of games, by the way?
Well, just think of the work of trying to make a mock draft, and yet you obviously embraced it and loved it, right?
I didn't read any scouting reports, and I don't watch any film. The whole secret to what I was doing, I was a writer. I wasn't a scout. I didn't know what a player looked like, but I talked to the people that did. Over 20 years, being in all the buildings, I developed great relationships with general managers, scouts, assistant coaches. And I had a list of people I called to at the end. I was talking 130 people in NFL buildings that actually evaluated and drafted players. And one GM told me they considered me the 33rd board. I was the one guy talking to every team. That's why it was so accurate. I was the consensus draft board. So my top 100 was always pretty good. I always had 88, 90, 91, 92.
But don't they BS you? Don't they BS you? They don't tell you what they're going to do.
No, because it was a sharing. It was a sharing deal.
Okay, I see.
They
okay.
knew I talked to everybody. I didn't tell anybody who I talked to.
You exchange.
I talked to everybody. Yeah. Well, the great story was after the Patriots won their last Super Bowl, and Edelman was the MVP. One of the writers asked Belichick, "What did you see in Edelman no one else did?" And Belichick said, "Well, I got to give Rick Gosselin credit to that one. He put us on Edelman."
I remember that.
So yeah. when I talked to people, there was a good chance they were going to get something from me as much as I could get from them. I had calls from teams on the clock. Asked me, but did we miss something on this guy? That's how good the information was, and that's how open they were with me. They didn't really BS me, because if they BS me, I knocked them off the network. And if you didn't give back, I knocked you off the network. I took some GMs off the network, but all they were doing was using my information, not giving me anything back. It was a give and take thing, and that's why it was a consensus board. It was an accurate board because I was the only guy talking to all 32 teams.
What a great quote. You told Belichick, allegedly, "I don't think he can play quarterback," meaning Edelman in the NFL, "but I have heard he's a pretty good player." Has Edelman ever come up to you? Is he aware of that story, that he might not have been a Patriot if you hadn't put something in Belichick's ear?
I've never met Edelman.
That's pretty interesting. Rick, you know, it sounds like, I guess like everything else in life, but it sounds like a lot of politics. So you and I grew up in Detroit and we idolized Alex Karras. Now you were one of the guys responsible for this. And our friend and our colleague, I know Jerry Green, was very much responsible for getting Charlie Sanders finally into the Hall of Fame. So is there ever a quid pro quo? Like you're talking to some guy in Miami and you say, "Okay, I'm going to vote for Charlie Sanders, but you vote for one of the Dolphins." Does that happen?
When we get together for the senior meeting, there's nine people on the committee, but only five get in. Five go to Canton. I mean, like, I was there. I was one of the five when we picked Charlie Sanders. I was one of the five when we picked Dick LeBeau. And I made the presentation for Karras on the Centennial class. That was going to be his one shot. And I was the guy assigned to make the presentation because I wanted to do the presentation. The one thing that kind of jumped out at people, I said the 97 and a half career sacks by Karras were more than first ballot Hall of Famer Warren Sapp, who played one more season and 32 more games than Karras in amassing his 96 and a half sacks. And Karras played in an era when NFL offense was throwing the ball 22 to 24 times a game, not the 34 to 36 times a game of the Sapp era.
Oh, and by the way, and by the way,
great pass rusher.
Right, and by the way, he was 6 feet. He was 6'1" and 240 pounds as a defensive tackle. Alex Karras.
Well, that
gotta count for something.
Everybody else was smaller too.
Well, was Alex Karras only going to get one shot at the Hall of Fame? Is that what you said?
This was going to be his best shot. That's the first time he's ever been in a room.
Oh, okay.
So if this was going to be his shot, I felt this was going to be his shot. And I think this was a cleanup class. They're going to try to take care of guys that have been overlooked for 10 decades, 100 years. And Karras, he waited 45 years for this one shot in the room. Now, I talked to Belichick, and Belichick told me that Karras was number one guy on his list.
Now, is that because he and, like, Horning took until 86? We just talked about him earlier in the show. Is it the whole gambling thing? Might Karras have gone in earlier, or was there kind of a black mark against him?
Well, I think the championship thing weighed heavily, which is why Horning goes in. Horning wins 5 titles. Karras doesn't win any. I told you it's very important to have a ring, especially when you didn't have stats. Back then, we didn't know Karras had 97.5 sacks. They didn't count sacks. Somebody else went back and did all that stuff. But back then, offensive linemen, defensive linemen, they didn't have stats. You know, if they didn't have rings, they were long shots.
Yeah. You're not fully retired. You write for Sports Illustrated. And since we've talked about your growing up and your obviously love of the Lions, you helped get Karras in there and Charlie Sanders. You this week in Sports Illustrated had the Lions 28th out of 32 after the shutout loss to Carolina before yesterday's game. Do you see any reason to slide them lower? Will they still be ahead of the Jets, Jags, Bengals, and Falcons?
There's a tandem going down, Dallas and Detroit. No one will catch the Jets, though. Let me just say that. Bob's Jets. No one will catch Bob's Jets.
My Jets, too. I was a Jets fan before he was growing up in New York. Yeah.
Hey, because you're so well-connected and you've been around all these guys in pro football so long, the story we always heard about why William Clay Ford was so loyal to the bungling, incompetent, evil Russ Thomas is that he felt that Thomas saved his life, that Ford had a serious drinking problem. Russ saved his life, and that's why Ford kept him on. What do you know about that?
All I know is I've heard the same story. I was out of Detroit. I never really got to know the Lions people. I was only there for 2 years, and I was shook back up. So I had heard that story, but I can't add anything to the story.
Yeah. I want to ask you a couple other things then, too. First of all, about the Steelers-Ravens situation. We're not sure as we record this they're even going to play on Sunday. So what the thought that dawned on me, Rick, as soon as we know who's in the playoffs, how do we know that the first playoff game ain't going to be canceled at the last minute? How do we know that the Super Bowl isn't going to be canceled on Saturday night with the COVID-19 stuff?
Yeah, we don't. Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if they play the Super Bowl in March. No, everything is fluid.
I agree.
I'm not sure how they're going to play this Baltimore-Pittsburgh game.
Isn't that ridiculous? I mean, here you got the MVP of the league. Lamar Jackson can't play in the game. They're in the playoff chase. The Steelers are 10-0. I guess, is that the number? Obviously, I was going to ask you what the great storylines are. That's got to be the storyline, is that there really is no storyline because it changes every week because you don't know who's going to actually make it to the field.
Yeah, I'll tell you what. Pittsburgh, that is the best organization in football. They've had 3 head coaches since 1969. I think the Browns have had 6 in the last 10 years. You know, there's a lot to say about stability. They have a philosophy how they want to play football. They want to run the ball, play defense. And when you got a franchise quarterback, you can throw the ball more. That's why they're 10-0. They don't have rebuilding seasons. And when they do, like 1 year, the Steelers went 6-10 with Cowher. And a lot of people wanted to fire Cowher, so the Steelers gave him an extension that offseason. They like stability, and that's the key. So many franchises don't get it. You know, pick the one coach you believe in and stick with him. Too many teams pick the wrong coach, like the one in Detroit.
I'm going to ask you. That's exactly what I was going to ask you. Do you know Patricia at all, and what the hell's wrong with him?
No, but my philosophy, and I get a pretty good feel for the Patriot building. My philosophy, if you're going to hire a coach out of the New England building and it's not Belichick, you're hiring the wrong guy.
Yeah.
And if you're going to hire a GM or a personnel guy out of the Patriots building and it's not Belichick, you're hiring the wrong guy. And you look at Belichick's coaching tree, virtually all of them are failures. And Bill O'Brien got it this year. Yeah. Matt Patricia's probably going to get it in the offseason. It's all Belichick.
Yeah, the special teams coach is head coach of the New York Giants. I'm in New York today, here in New York. Yeah. Joe Judge. Off the same thing. You don't think he's going to make it either?
Well, we've only seen what he's 3-7 right now. The jury's still out. You know, we thought Bill O'Brien would be a hit, and now he's gone.
Yeah.
He was not, you know, he made the Hopkins for David Johnson deal, and that's what killed him. Yeah. Took your best receiver away from your developing quarterback.
Yeah. Rick, I want to get back to that, to me at least, shocking statement you just made about the Super Bowl perhaps being delayed until heaven knows when, March. Isn't it conceivable that as soon as we know what teams will be in the playoffs, that they'll do an NBA, NHL thing and immediately go into a bubble? Have they talked about that in the NFL?
I think it's probably been discussed, but the problem is, you know, in hockey and basketball, you're dealing with smaller numbers. In football, you're going to take a traveling party of at least 100 people per team. Yeah. So I don't know where, what city you take them, where or what hotels you could put them all in. I mean, the numbers are so overwhelming in football. I don't see the bubble thing happening. Not like it did hockey and basketball, and they did it right. I mean, I applaud what those two sports did.
Maybe they got to fly them to Alaska and just bring them back for the game. You know, I can't see 100 guys getting on two airplanes and keeping it straight. I just, you know, listen, life is funny, and it gets funnier when you play in the championship series.
Yeah, I'm surprised there haven't been more games canceled. Yeah, I mean, every week there's some college games canceled. I'm surprised there haven't been more NFL games canceled and pushed back.
Well, last thing I have for you, my favorite storyline this year is Brady and Tampa. And I don't know Bruce Arians, but I've always been a big admirer of him. I just like his style. I saw maybe something on NFL Network about him, his life and his career. And I just seems like a guy that I'd like to hang out with. What he's done in Tampa is so interesting, bringing in the Antonio Browns and getting Gronk and Brady and all that. Are you intrigued by that? And did you think he would succeed there? And how do you look at Arians as a guy, as a coach, and what he's done down there?
Was that a question?
Yeah.
I think Bruce is a great coach when he has the quarterback. I mean, he had Manning at Indianapolis, he had Roethlisberger in Pittsburgh, and he knew he wasn't getting where he wanted to go with James Winston. And Brady's out there. I knew Brady would end up playing in a warm weather climate. He wasn't going to go play north. He might have played in a dome. He needs something that would favor his arm. He's 43 years old. And he needs the warmer weather. He doesn't have the arm that he had 10, 20 years ago. So it was going to be a shorter passing game. But Bruce, this is a one-year run. Bringing in Gronkowski and Antonio Brown and Tom Brady, it's a one-year run for Bruce. I think Brady may play another year, but I'm not sure about Brown and Gronkowski.
Yeah. But Rick, what Tom Brady do we get? That might have been the worst game I've ever seen Tom Brady play the other night.
Yeah, that's pretty
good. He looked like a 43-year-old man.
Yeah.
And that's, he did. Look at Drew Brees. Drew Brees at the end. Drew Brees is not the Drew Brees we knew 10, 20 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, how much can Arians really count on Tom Brady? You don't know what you're going to get.
Well, that's why he's got two running backs. That's one of the reasons he brought in Leonard Fournette. Mm-hmm. You know, if they can get into leads, they can win a Super Bowl with Brady. But the problem is, you know, they got smoked by the Rams, and they got smoked by the Saints. You know, they need to, it's like Baltimore. They need to get into a lead, and you can win with Brady. Yeah. And that's the problem right now with Tampa. When they're ahead, they're very good. When they're behind, they're not.
Are your sources across the country telling you that Quinn and Patricia are definitely gone? And whom would you recommend to be the Lions' new GM and head coach?
Well, I don't. I assume they're going to be gone. I assume this is the last year. I thought there was a mandate they had to go to the playoffs. And again, you know, they're riding on Belichick's coattails. And the
Lions, who's the best young coach they could hire?
Well, Eric Bieniemy is going to be the hot property because he's the offensive coordinator at Kansas, even though Andy Reid's calling the plays.
Mm-hmm. Now, so that's the guy, as far as you're concerned, if they could get Bieniemy?
He's going to be the hot guy. Now, I think Kansas City is still the team to beat because they got Patrick Mahomes and no one else does. I mean, that guy is an absolute magician, especially when the games matter. I still think they're a team to beat. If they win it again, there'll be a line of teams wanting to talk to Bieniemy.
Well, Rick, I got to say, I'm happy for you that you spent all those tough years in the newspaper business, all the hours and all the work, and now you're kind of in semi-retirement, but you still have your finger in the game. You still got the pulse of the game. You get to do stuff on your own terms. So congratulations on a career well-lived.
Thanks, Eli. I appreciate that. Rick,
thank you very much.
I enjoyed the visit.
Great talking to you.
Thanks, Rick. And I still don't believe you got me out when you allegedly pitched that one hitter against the White Sox in Little League, my team.
Yeah. Can't spell Bob Page without a K.
I can't imagine Bob.
And you owe me this one for me allowing you to speak with your boyhood hero, Danny McLean, today. Because I know you went out in the backyard in Detroit and pretended you were Danny McLean, didn't you?
Everybody had the pointed toe when we pitched.
Yeah, that's so cool. Thanks, Rick. Take care of yourself.
Pleasure, guys.
Appreciate it. Stay safe. Care. Not a very well-known name here in Detroit, even though he came from here, but it's great to talk to people with information who had their pulse on many important events over the years. So
I hope
you enjoyed listening to Rick Goslin as much as we did talking to him. Have a great weekend, everybody. We'll see you again on Monday.
Stay safe. And Eli's going to be here. How about that? Two shows in a row. We'll look forward to that.
You all then.